Parliament is a caravansary, a place of rest for the night, a place for pilgrims to stay, and that we are all pilgrims moving from one body to another along the path of life. That is, we are all on a pilgrimage. We are on a pilgrimage from here to eternity. We are on a pilgrimage from now to then. And that pilgrimage is one of instruction. We are traveling the world of learning. Learning to live. Not all learning out of books, but learning out of the conscience and consciousness within ourselves. Learning what real love is and what it is not. Learning what truth means, even though we may not possess it. We can perhaps be possessed by it. We want to know all these things in their full and proper light. We want to know that all ambitions must ultimately be transmuted into aspirations, or the pains will keep right on. That out of aspiration comes the instinct to grow, the instinct to grow lovingly and wisely. The Jai moving through the community performs all kinds of simple services, religious and secular, without thought of reward or without any hesitation over whether it is a member of his own cult or not. He is out simply to know that the only way he can grow is by growing. The only way he can achieve his end is by so living that he can fulfill his end in his own nature. When he realizes this and starts living that way, harmlessness is that follows. Harmlessness is the individual who does not hurt even the most simple and elementary form of life. The refuges that the Jains have created for animals, according to Mr. Bissett, one of the historians of the subject, has a room in it to take care of old, tired, and worn-out insects. Now, we have a way of doing that, too, with the place water. Well, we're not saying that we want to do that. But the idea is simply an extension of our responsibilities to each other. All things that live have a meaning of some kind. We may not understand it. And for our purposes and in our way, it may be an impediment to us. But everything that lives, lives for a reason. And everything that we do is for a reason. And while we may not be put into an old age home for insects, we still have to build an understanding and a sympathy for life. And today, there is no real sympathy for life. But the condition of the stock exchange shows that we're not very tender about each other. And that's only one aspect. Another aspect is the slaughterhouse for animals. They're both creations of profit. They have no consideration for humanity as such. Everything is in terms of dollars and nonsense. And we all become part of it. We die of misery when the stocks go down. We are elated when they go up a little. When actually, it is all part of a strange world of unrealities that is more difficult to rationalize than Alice in Wonderland. Actually, we are here primarily for one purpose only, and that is to release the God in us, that it may become part of the God in the world. It will become part of the God in all other faiths, and in all other human beings, and that the time will come when the love of God will have victory over the hatreds of men. There is no other way. We are thinking now of all kinds of ways to train it, and all the kinds of ways of solution. We have another election coming up, but to the Jain people, we've got to find whatever it is that is according to the laws of heaven. We've got to rule each other and ourselves by universal law and not by the little statutes that men put in books. Sometimes maybe their statutes are pretty good. We'll learn that too. But for the most part, we're trying to solve the problem of the outside from the outside, and it cannot be done. it will get worse. The computers will get bigger. Everything will become more and more complicated, because the individual is not thinking in a loving way of the needs of the rest of humanity or the needs of the sentient world to which he belongs. He doesn't realize that there is a one life pattern behind everything. There is only one life, and it must be protected. And those who attack or assail that one life in any of its forms bring down upon themselves a karmic reaction. The purpose of life is fulfillment. Even if it's the life of an insect, there is something to fulfill. These little creatures were not built for the fun of it, or just simply accidents along the way. The more we study them, the more we realize that the infinite detail, wonders, unbelievable complexities in the ordinary housefly. We do not know what to do about these things, and we probably won't for the while. But we can remember just this one point, that there is something behind form that is more important than form. And if we will gradually change the human pattern, the rest of nature will adjust very easily to the constructiveness in humanity. For man is the steward of nature in this particular world in which we live. And this world is one of great wonder. I remember Thompson Seton used to tell me about the proofs that he had in various ways that to animals, human beings are gods. Just as man in this mysterious way turns to the invisible God for strength and succor, so the animal in its emergency nearly always turns to the human being. Man is the god of the beast. He is the thing that the animal world must turn to in an emergency. And when he turns to it now, of course, it's open season on hunting, and that's the end of the animal. These things have to change. When we destroy life just for sport, then there's something wrong with us. There's something that isn't coming through. And the thing that isn't coming through is the divine life that so loved the world that it created these animals and turned them over to our tender mercy. And our mercy is not tender. Therefore, we are still faced with the problem of finding out why these creatures exist. What is their purpose? What is it that makes it necessary for nature to produce this infinite complexity of life? Well, the answer is that the life behind all things is infinitely complex and is eternally manifesting through the evolving individualities that it sends forth from itself. Every one of these forms of life is a quality of the infinite itself. Every one of these forms has to exist as an archetype in nature, or it cannot manifest. Man did not create them. The idea that man created all these other kingdoms is not factual. The fact is, man has created very little except trouble. And it's time for him to stop this if he wants to get along better. Now, we're coming into a great emergency in human civilization at this time. An emergency that we must all face. An emergency for which we're going to legislate and cross-legislate and go through all kinds of legislative problems, as though we can actually change the course of nature from the outside. The real cause is not anything to do with legislation of that kind. We've got to produce a revelation of the divine purpose. It's not necessarily creedal, it's not necessarily religious as we know it, but we must accept the reality of an infinite law in which we all live, and that salvation depends upon obedience to that law. No one can change it. No power can change the energy and the value and the integrities that keep the cosmos in its orbits. It cannot change the way of space. It cannot change the Milky Way. It cannot create anything that will solve the problems of existence, because creation is eternal and inevitable and not necessary to create. It is only necessary for created things to become aware of the reason for themselves. It is only necessary that man learns to live according to the laws by which he was created. Now, this is going to become more apparent as we go along. With the increasing population, we look forward to a planet of 8 billion inhabitants. Well, 8 or 10 billion inhabitants can be taken care of. Many more than that can be taken care of. But not if we continue to exploit each other. If we continue to create new machines and expand our scientific horizon, but do nothing to take care of the need of the simple humanity. The more of us there are, the more humanity we have to have, or everything will go to pieces. The more we are, the more unselfish we must become, for selfishness can destroy us all. So as we get greater and greater in population, and as one by one the natural resources are reduced, we are going to come finally to the point where we have to restore a Garden of Eden, or else face an inevitable desert, which will become uninhabitable. So the little Garden of Eden is there, always will be there. This planet can be a happy home for all the forms of life that develop here. There's no danger of one form be taking over, because there's a law governing the development of life, and there has never been any problem that needed man to tell it what to do. The problem with man is to do what he should do. The same way in government and politics, education, religion, culture, art, music, literature, all these things move from inside. And if they are allowed to move honestly and properly, will enrich humanity and will bring with them no hint of selfishness. We won't have individuals who refuse to write a poem unless they can get $1 million advance on it. All this type of thing is part of a very, very serious mistake. Now, we can't expect these poor little folks that live in this world to be completely away from all these mistakes. We cannot expect a little group like the giants, maybe 3 million altogether, to have the power to make all these changes. We go over there and look, and there are just a few people living quietly in small towns and communities, or in centers within larger groups. They have never expected to transmute the world. They have never expected to become the most powerful sect in the creation of things. They've never fought with any other religion. All they have tried to do is allow the God in themselves to have something to say about the way they live. And apparently God blesses the poor because he's made a lot of them. And they seemingly have the greatest probability of serving him. The more we have, the more worldly we become. So a natural, simple, moderate way of life with what we need and a few luxuries to kind of take the sting out of growth, all this is possible. But this vast conglomerate of false attitudes and false economic policies and these terrible physical ambitions of human beings who can't be happy unless they're running other human beings. All of this, nature said, not that way. And it's about time that we begin to think in terms of letting the inside come out. We don't have to read it out of books. We don't have to do anything except, as Thomas Akempis pointed out, just allow the Spirit to work, to allow the presence of the divine power in ourselves to express itself without putting all kinds of limitations upon that expression. If we will allow ourselves to be good, we will discover that we have always been good and didn't know it. If we allow ourselves to be peaceful, we will know we always wanted peace but didn't know how to get it. The only way to get rid of complexity is to stop being complex. The more we try to make more complexity for solution, the worse it's going to get. We have probably another 100 years before we get all these things simmered down, but some of them can be handled rather quickly. And they can be handled by anyone who honestly believes in the reality of a deity that loves its creation. if God is merciful, and we all assume that deity is apparent, if we do this, we will find that it is quite conceivable that we can allow the parent in ourselves to come through. Each individual is endowed with a divine factor. And it is this divine factor which we have ignored since we were pushed out of Eden in the first place, or whatever was the equivalent of Eden. At least we were pushed out of something. And we have never allowed this reality to take over. We have tried to, we have prayed, we have asked help, we have done all these things, but we have some way not created the proper atmosphere. And the reason why we pray, and our prayers are sometimes answered, is because we were justly entitled to those answers. When they're not answered, there's some reason why they're not answered. And that reason isn't that God was overlooking us that day. It is rather the fact that where we deserve, we get. Where we don't deserve, we continue to suffer. And whenever we ask to be relieved of a burden that we should solve ourselves, the burden will stay with us. But if we have so lived and so conducted ourselves that we have outgrown that burden by legitimate means, it will be lifted. Everywhere the change has to start within ourselves and has to move from there outward to the world of our environment. We're going to have to look over the problems of our homes and our family life. We're going to have to discover what constitutes an acceptable family situation in terms of divine life. We are going to have to realize that a family must live under law, divine law, and that this divine law can be administered on a human level with justice for all and love of God dominant in it. We can find any answer we want if we really want the answer. But if we merely want an excuse to continue making the same mistake, we will go through one cycle of depressions and inflations after another. We are beginning to realize the fear of nuclear war. We are realizing that we created something we didn't understand and never will probably understand. We created a very convenient means for self-elimination. And this creation was supported by some of the worst thinking the world has ever done. But on the other hand, it hasn't happened. And now we find a gradual awareness coming that it shouldn't happen. The inside is beginning to speak. The inside is speaking in many ways and in many places. It is still a small voice for most. But the small voice may be small in terms of society, but that small voice, when it gets a little louder in us, is the most powerful force in the world. So that we have always had and always will have within ourselves the capacity to be right. And by following that capacity to make the world what it should be. It isn't necessary for us to go through all of the privations and trials and sufferings that's figured the past. Look at this moment, this in trouble in every major country of the world. Everything is proving conclusively we're doing it wrong. Yet with all the force we have, we try to continue to do it wrong or make a few minor tucks in our mistakes so that they won't look quite so bad, or maybe get a little bit of something better into them. We should be studying definitely that the whole path of humanity since the 19th century in the Western world has been toward materialism, toward the complete ignoring of the ethics of the divine purpose. We are perfectly willing to admit that the eye of a housefly is so incredible that we will never understand it. But we are unwilling to accept the fact that there's something out there that does understand it and did create it. And we've got to find out ways in which we can do that which is right. We must become in our turn pens in the hands of a ready writer. We must find a way to come back to the simple facts of life, to live as we should have lived and have lived in a way in which we can spend the years of our lives in a peaceful relationship. Now, what might be one of the rewards of that? I think it probably one of the rewards would simply be that the last 10 or 15 years of life will be happier, which we will no longer be lonely people. We will no longer be exiled from society simply by age. We will be also able to reap the rewards of good thinking, good planning, and good understanding. Sometime these birds have to come back to roost, and what we do wrong will ultimately do wrong for us or make things very difficult. So we do realize very definite that in this life in which we are now involved, that a major breakthrough is necessary. In this patching up of things, we mean to try to do a little better, but keep them all the sins and complexities and mistakes that we have learned to consider essential. We feel it essential to have bad television programs. Why? We don't know. We feel that seemingly that it's essential that our mail be smothered with advertising. Nobody really cares too much, but it all bears witness to a basic failure, a failure of the integrity in people, and the failure of the insight which causes us to stay away from that which is not good. We just pass it over and say, well, that's the way it is, and go on doing what we intended to do in the first place. So now we are rather an emergency. An emergency which can only be solved by some really serious thinking. Now, if this solution required a new currency or required a new system of government to be imposed upon man, it would be different. But we tried that. It never worked. We cannot be governed by anything but the spirit within ourselves and be safe. And the spirit within ourselves must not be confused with our ambitions and our avarice and our egotism and egocentricity. The voice within ourselves is always honest. And the moment it appears to be dishonest, we must suspect that we are getting the wrong message. That behind the self message that we all have, this inner ambition, this ambition for wealth, for power, for security, for happiness, for health, all these things, if this voice alone speaks, it continues to fight for that which the spirit doesn't even want. It is necessary, therefore, to transcend this voice entirely, to give up all self-centeredness and selfishness, and listen for the voice that, as a compass says, comes to us in meekness. Harmlessness is therefore a form of meekness. It is the individual admitting that from the cradle to the grave and before and after, the individual is a child in the keeping of a universal mystery. That behind all of us is a parental pattern by which we will be protected if we protect it. It will give us the needs if we will give it the soul. If we will live according to the rules of life, the right rules of the right life, we have nothing to fear. And it is far better to fail here in monetary things and succeed in the universe than it is to succeed here and fail in the universe. For the simple reason, this is a moment. The universe is forever. This is an embodiment which will pass away. But the mystery is an eternal life that goes on forever. Therefore, we are either citizens of this embodiment with all its limitations to be born and die with it, or we are citizens of eternity, part of a pattern so vast, so wonderful, so beautiful, that once we have experienced it as an adventure in our own souls, we can never lose it again. And now, for the first time, the human being is beginning to look around and becoming aware of the fallacy of error, the fallacy of selfishness, the fallacy of pretense, and the fallacy of building a life here. We can rent a house here for a lifetime, but we can't build a life here. Our life is built for us in eternity. It is something that we will always have. But we can obliterate and mutilate its manifestations through the misuse of the powers and privileges that we feel that we have. Therefore, I think these little people over there in India have something to tell us. They are not theology-minded, but they do believe in one eternal spirit of good, and that man becomes as nearly perfect as he can become when he serves that spirit of good and becomes like it. When the goodness comes through him, he is growing. When the goodness comes to him, he may abuse it. But when it comes through him into his own life, into his own daily experiences, it becomes a great and wonderful power for the transformation of society. And each one now is in the presence of lessons. Lessons about this. Between now and the end of the year, there will be more lessons. And they will recall for a very great thoughtfulness and a great realization and the fact that we can't talk ourselves out of a dilemma. That we must work together to solve the dilemma. There are problems in human society that cannot be solved by laws. They have to be solved by love. They have to be solved by understanding, by sharing, by brotherhood and comradeship. And until we find that out, we are missing the message that comes from within ourselves and upon which we must always depend. Therefore, I think this life of harmlessness that these people believe in is very useful to us to think about. I think it tells us something that we can start with right away. The next time someone lifts the phone, be sure that harmlessness is in your voice. You may not want the product. You may feel it's an interruption and an injustice. But actually, it is something that you can simply and quietly ignore, but never hurt. Never hurt another. Never scandalize another. Never carry criticisms. Never do these things that are now becoming obviously more offensive. Now we are having books published every day, publishing the private lives of other citizens. This is not because we are great lovers of truth. It's because the royalties are considerable. This is not something from the inside. We do not have the right to judge anything. We have a right to be a little critical of ourselves if the need arises. But judge not lest ye be judged. For as you judge others, so shall it be judged unto you. There are laws of kindness, and those have been ignored for centuries by most. But the few who are still kindly, or have been kindly, are the immortals on the pages of history. They are the ones that will never be forgotten, while the big and ambitious competitors will be forgotten very quickly. In fact, there are a great many people now who can't tell you who were the principal people in World War II. Children growing up do not even know of these people. But it will be a very long time before they come to forget a few of the noble souls that have helped to make life worthwhile. There is always evidence of truth trying to come through. And more of it must come through if we are going to solve the issues that confront us in the next few years. We are coming very close to the first clear revelation of this problem in terms that every nation on earth must face and can understand. This is the moment that may prove to be in time, the blessed moment the ages have waited for, the moment in which we finally come to the realization we cannot be stupid and happy. When we get that point very clearly in our minds, we're well on the way to a better way of life. And then we can live by the God within, and we don't need to worry about creeds and sects and denominations. We can live according to the basic doctrines of all scriptures of the world, for they've all had the same message. We can begin to live them instead of talking about them. We can put our own lives in order, reunite the broken families where we can, and bless the help that we can give each other, and begin to build for a permanent culture rather than on the idea that responsibilities must be avoided at all costs. The truth is, responsibilities must always be accepted, worked with and solved. That is the secret of growth. And what is growth? Growth is the spirit within man gradually working its way out into the control of his objective life. Growth is from the inside out, and no permanent growth can come except by the release of the divine quotient in man's complex constitution. Well, that's it. Now, I've got a few announcements I'd like to make. First of all, I'd like to wish you all a very happy Mother's Day. And I'm sure that in the days that come, mothers will gain a great deal more understanding than they have enjoyed in recent years, because they are part of that which has suffered as a result of the increasing selfishness which has dominated human conduct. I'd like to announce at this time that on Monday evening at 7:30 here, the Veritas Foundation will have a workshop. My wife will be speaking. It's a friendly gathering of people interested in the very things we are talking about this morning, and I'm certain she is going to bring into this discussion a discussion of the feminine principle of the source of existence, which she calls the space mother. And this is a very interesting and important contribution to modern thinking, and we hope that you will attend, if you can, her meeting on Monday evening as a sort of a special Mother's Day celebration. So we hope to see you then.